Sup, you beautiful bastards. Hope you had a fantastic Thursday. Welcome back to the Philip DeFranco Show. Remember, hit that like button, otherwise I'm gonna have to punch you in the throat, which is not a thing that I'm actually gonna do. But for some reason, a good number of you respond very positively to threats of physical violence, so I'm just gonna roll with it. But that said, let's just jump into it. And the first thing we're gonna talk about today is our douchebag, or I mean, actually, this is really, really bad, our monster of the day. And that person today is 25-year-old Kadisha Bishop. She has been arrested and charged after surveillance footage from a city bus showed her shoving an elderly man in the back as he tried to leave. The video, which was tweeted out by Las Vegas police, which, by the way, I'm not gonna show the actual crime being committed here. You can watch the video on your own. I will warn you though, it is disturbing, it is graphic. You know, you had police tweeting this out, asking for anyone that was present to speak on this. But as far as what happened, according to police, Bishop had been yelling and cursing at the 74-year-old victim, Serge Fournier, with reports saying that just before the attack, Fournier told Bishop to be nicer to passengers. And in the video, you see this man who appeared to be pushing a cart fall face first on the pavement. Then reportedly when police responded to the scene, Bishop was nowhere to be found. Fournier refused medical treatment, even though he did end up going to the hospital later that same day. According to Fournier's neighbors, for the next several weeks, the man's life was basically hell.
He wasn't able to eat, and he was in a lot of pain, crushed hip.
And very unfortunately, he ended up passing away on April 23rd, about a month after this incident. And the big thing here was the Clark County coroner said that his death was actually caused by, quote, complications of blunt force torso injuries, and they ruled it a homicide. And so about 2 weeks after this man's passing, on May 6th, Bishop was arrested after someone identified her from the surveillance footage. She was booked into Clark County Detention Center that afternoon and has been charged with one count of open murder, which in Nevada basically means that the documents used to charge Bishop of this crime contain various levels and degrees of murder. So as of right now, it is difficult to pinpoint exactly what type of murder charge that she could be facing. But regarding that note, as her case progresses, the jury will ultimately decide what level of charge they believe she committed. And these specific details are important details because of the state. Because Nevada, even though they haven't used capital punishment since 2006, is technically a death penalty state. And so if we see first degree murder here, prosecutors could seek it. Now, if she was convicted of first degree murder, but they don't go for the death penalty, she could be facing a definite term of 50 years in prison with parole possibilities after 20 years, or all the way to life in prison with no possible parole. And if Bishop was convicted of second degree murder, she could be facing 25 years to life with eligibility for parole after 10. Now, as far as Bishop's status, we reached out to the detention center and a representative there told us Bishop was on house arrest, meaning that she is still technically in custody but not at the jail. And as of right now, she hasn't entered a plea yet but is due back in court next Thursday, May 23rd. Also, when we looked further into the story, we found that Bishop was not a first-time offender. Court records show that in 2012, she was found guilty on one count of battery, and in 2013, guilty of one count of domestic battery. Also, reports have said that Bishop was with her son when she shoved this man, and when police went to question the boy's father, he told them that they were no longer together because she was too violent. But ultimately, that is where we are with the story right now. Obviously, we're gonna keep our eye out for any updates. And so, of course, like we do with every story, I'd love to know your thoughts on this. What do you think should happen? What do you think the punishment should be? Let me know. Then we saw more updates around this James Charles situation, although some of the new angles don't actually even involve James Charles. Instead, as far as public reaction, we've seen a lot of people taking aim at Jeffree Star. Jeffree Star in this situation, of course, the mega successful and mega popular person who called James Charles a predator. He called James Charles a danger to society, said that he's been banned from his home and that he has not seen him since February. He also owns Killer Merch, which seems to have ended its relationship with James Charles as far as merch sales. And so in response to this situation, we've seen people digging into Jeffree Star's past. And really, anyone that's familiar with Jeffree Star knows that he has kind of a storied history with several controversies. But along with a slew of old tweets, there is now this video clip of him from, I think it's about 2010, going around. And in it appears to show Jeffree and another person touching a man who doesn't seem too comfortable being touched. And then it appears he just grabs or hits his genitals and commenting on the side.
I knew it was big. We knew it.
Which resulted in a good number of people saying, well, Jeffree, how can you say that James Charles is a predator, he's a danger to society, when there's actual footage of you seemingly accosting a man? They also argue that you can't even use the excuse that some people have been using for James Charles, that he's so young, he's just 19. In this clip, with it being 10 years ago, Jeffree would have been around 23. But of course, like with so many things, there wasn't just one reaction, and you had a lot of other people also defending Jeffree Star, saying that he's acknowledged so many things from his past, that he's moved past it, he's apologized for it. Also saying things like the video, it's a showcase of a different time, more edgy humor, given that it was a long time ago. Right? People saying you don't know if it was a skit or if they talked to the guy before the filming and it was supposed to be kind of just this bit. On the more drama and not legal aspect of it, you had people calling Jeffree Star a hypocrite as well. Because like we talked about before, he had that previously mentioned, this is why James Charles was banned from my house tweet. But then there appear to be screenshots of him being super chummy with James Charles on Twitter in April. And this somewhat kind of new focus and angle with this story is somewhat supercharged by the beauty community itself, which I will say very much appears to be this kind of very large group of investigators slash instigators. Like, I thought the gaming community was invested in all the relationships and the stories, but whoa, no one holds a candle. And it's also an angle that's been charged by I'm Alex and several other commentators in the community. Alex even bring up that in the past, Jeffree Star had a song called Straight Boys. But ultimately, that's where we are as of right now. Also, James Charles is back to gaining subscribers as of today, so it'll be interesting to see that. But regarding kind of the main story there, what are your thoughts around the Jeffree Star hypocrisy claims? Do you personally see it as hypocrisy or something he needs to be held accountable for, or do you think that it is so far away, so long ago, so disconnected? Right? Do you see it as just kind of this attempt to change the narrative or something else? I'm really fascinated to know where you stand. And let's talk about this huge college admissions news, and this time, no, it is not having to do with Operation Varsity Blues and a bunch of rich people trying to pay to get their kids into college. Instead, what we're talking about is that this morning, the Wall Street Journal reported that the College Board, the organization that oversees the SAT, they will start assigning what they're calling an adversity score to all the students who take the test. And it's pretty much exactly what it sounds like. This new adversity score will attempt to look at several different factors in students' social and economic background. The general idea behind this is that it will help level the playing field for students who aren't given the same advantages as wealthier applicants. So, first off, how does this work? Well, the score is calculated using 15 different factors to assess the student's family, neighborhood, and high school environment. And these include things like crime rate and poverty levels where the student live, as well as family income and educational differences. According to the Wall Street Journal, the score is measured on an average of 1 to 100 with an average adversity score of 50, with the numbers above 50 representing those who are more disadvantaged and the numbers below 50 representing those who are more privileged. Also, a note regarding the scoring, I think it's important to hit on, the College Board hasn't said how specifically it will calculate or weigh the various factors that they're measuring. Now, unlike the SAT scores that the students receive after they take the test, students will not be told what their adversity scores are. Instead, colleges will be the one reviewing the scores when they look at the student's application. And the thing is, this is actually already happening. 50 different schools already used the adversity score last year as part of the test. And now the College Board is planning to extend the program to 150 colleges this next fall and then expand to even more schools next year. So there's the question, well, why is the College Board introducing this new score? And according to the College Board, they're concerned about how income inequality influences standardizing test results. And according to the Wall Street Journal, white students scored an average of 177 points higher than black students and 133 points higher than Hispanic students in 2018 results. Asian students scored 100 points higher than white students, and the children of wealthy and college-educated parents outperformed their classmates. And on that note, you had David Coleman, chief executive of the College Board, being quoted as saying, "There are a number of amazing students who may have scored less on the SAT, but have accomplished more. We can't sit on our hands and ignore the disparities of wealth reflected in the SAT." And so in 2015, the College Board started developing the adversity score after colleges began asking for more objective data on students' socioeconomic backgrounds. Additionally, this is being seen as potential future-proofing. There are a number of college admissions officers who have said that they are concerned that the Supreme Court could rule against race-based affirmative action being used as a factor in college admission. And so if and when that does happen, the adversity score would become very valuable for evaluating social factors. And the thing is, as we've discussed on the show before, those admissions officers have a right to be worried. Recently, there have been multiple lawsuits and legal challenges to affirmative action and how colleges assess a student's race in general. There's that high-profile lawsuit that accuses Harvard of discriminating against Asian American applicants by holding those students to a higher standard than students of other races. We've also seen similar lawsuits being filed against UNC Chapel Hill and the University of California. We've also seen the Trump administration launching multiple efforts to chip away at affirmative action. You know, last July, we saw the Department of Education and the Justice Department reversing several Obama-era guidelines on how schools can weight race in admissions. And in fact, just last month, we saw the Department of Education announce that it will require the Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center Medical School to stop considering race in its admissions process. And I mention all that to say that's why we're potentially seeing a focus on this adversity score. Because while historically race is often connected to other social and economic factors, technically, the adversity score is different because technically, it's not looking at race, it's just looking at all the other factors that can often be connected to it. Now, following this coming out, of course, there were big reactions from both sides, both positive and negative. You had the dean of undergraduate admissions at Yale, which is one of the 50 schools that were involved in the testing of the adversity score, praising the system, saying, "This adversity score is literally affecting every application we look at. It has been part of the success story to help diversify our freshman class." And according to the Wall Street Journal, the dean also said that the adversity score is important because it is a more consistent way to compare social and economic factors. But also at the same time, you had people like James Conroy, the director of college counseling at New Trier High School, which is reportedly a wealthy and predominantly white area of North Chicago. And James argues that colleges already focus too much on diversity, saying, "My emails are inundated with admissions officers who want to talk to our diversity kids." Continuing, "Do I feel minority students have been discriminated against? Yes, I do. But I see the reversal of it happening right now." We've also seen people talking on Twitter sharing their opinions. You had people wondering how an adversity score could be created by, quote, "using only school level and neighborhood level data, not personal data, and then hide the formula's results from the kid." Meanwhile, you also had others calling for the SAT and other standardized tests to just be abolished altogether. And at the same time, of course, you have people saying the background doesn't matter. It's ultimately the net result, right? Where are you now? Right, the argument being, when you take the SAT, you get a score. Why should, your parents don't make so much money or you didn't go to the best school matter? And so with this story and the number of opinions that we've seen out there, I wanted to pass the question off off to you. What are your thoughts around this? Do you think the adversity score, it's a good thing, a bad thing? Also, specifically, a question. I know the last time we talked about an affirmative action story, there were a good number of comments that had a lot of support saying they didn't support affirmative action. Right? People saying that admission should be colorblind. Do you see this as a better alternative or still no? Right? Was the issue that you had that it was being race-based, so if it's the other factors and it doesn't take into account race, is that better? Or are you more against of there being systems put in place that are kind of like meant to even things out or allow a ladder for someone that started in a lesser position? Any and all thoughts you have on this, I'm really fascinated to hear from you. And that's where we're going to end today's show. Now remember, if you like this video, you want to support the channel, we'd love if you took a second to just hit that like button, or if you really want to take the step, you can go to roguerocket.com/support and support us with a paid subscription, or just by supporting one of our fantastic sponsors who, of course, support us. Also, right now, if you're not 100% filled in, maybe you missed one of the last two videos we put out, you can click or tap right there to watch those, or just go to roguerocket.com. But with that said, of course, as always, my name's Philip DeFranco. You've just been filled in. I love yo faces, and I'll see you tomorrow.